Okay, well, we have a scientist who is talking to us very briefly for a moment. He came out and he said there are going to be three events between now and 2012. And he is a well-regarded scientist, someone you would know. And perhaps you've been talking to him. We don't know. We can't name him. Okay. And he says one is a CME, a coronal mass ejection from the sun. And Bill, you got to help me with this.
The second is a magnetic pole reversal.
Okay.
And said finally, a pole shift. And he said that these events will begin in 2009 and culminate in 2012. And then he wouldn't tell us any more because he said he was constrained by national security clearance, and we were the first people we'd spoken to outside of the national security community for the last 7 years. And it was only because we recognized his name and said, are you who we
think? He paid us a compliment, he sent us an email, and we got into a small dialogue. Now, we are being approached by all kinds of people, some from black ops,
aren't we all?
with secrets to tell, as well as remote viewers, et cetera, et cetera. And they've all got information about what may be coming down the pike from between now and 2012. Mm-hmm. We just went to Russia and interviewed Boriska, the child with past life recall of a life on Mars, who started talking at the age of 7, and we're going to be releasing that interview fairly soon. Basically saying Moscow is going to be inundated by water in a very matter-of-fact tone, and that it's going to happen in 2009. He doesn't know, at this age of like 11, he doesn't know why or how. He just knows it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting all kinds of evidence. There's evidence of underground bases, of preparation, to put, you know, certain groups of people in safe places and let the rest of the people, in fact, something on the order of 2/3 of the population, you know, just wing it and basically, you know,
that's
go by the wayside.
That's probably a very large underestimate.
It's an underestimate. Okay. Now, all of this, we don't like to believe that this is going to happen or that some cataclysm is so massive going to hit the Earth in such a way that between, you know, that these events are going to cause, you know, total destruction and the end of human life.
It's not the end of human life. It's the end of this cycle of civilization. And we will go on. The human race will go on. And if past evidence is accurate, which it is, there will be a new cycle. There will be a new set of cultures and civilizations, and we'll be the myths of their minds and their scribes and their sages, and they will someday develop spaceflight, and they will go to the moon, and they will have people who will keep the truth from them, and the cycle perpetuates ad nauseum unless we stop it here. So the name of the game, all of us who are looking at this from various facets, like the elephant, that's why the elephant is sitting over there, is we all need to combine our forces, our resources, our knowledge base, our goodwill, and most of all, enlist you guys out there watching this and change the script. The tools are there. I now know the tools are there. No matter what is, quote, coming, it can be dealt with because the physics is so extraordinary. The problem is political and spiritual will. And there's a small group that want us, in the worst case scenario, to all go away. So they're not solving. They're not lifting a finger to solve the problem. In fact, they are perpetuating the illusion, the lie being different at every level, that there is nothing that can be done. In fact, from our research, there is an extraordinary amount that can be done. In fact, it can be stopped. It can be changed. The first way that you conquer an enemy, and to them we are the enemy, is you make them conquer themselves. You make them give up. You make them want to stop fighting. You tell them it's hopeless. Remember the guys in Star Trek? You know, the Borg? You know? Fighting them is futile. Resistance is futile. Well, it's not. That is another level of the lie.
Okay, so if you can take the next, you know, what we have, you know, 15 minutes and tell us in some kind of form or fashion, what kind of technology or what kind of physics are you talking about? Are you talking about time travel? Are you talking about, it's hyperdimensional physics, I'm mm-hmm. sure. What is it that you see as the solution? And, you know, I know that you've been working with David Wilcock, and he has a very positive attitude towards the future. Is his positive attitude coming because of research you guys have done together, or because he has some of the same sources that you have?
It's a bit of both. It's you know, okay. The reason I got intrigued with Wilcock is because he was independently coming up with some of the same stuff we were coming up with. And I love independent confirmation. And that's the life's blood of real science. When somebody separate, you've never talked to, presents you with a database, and my God, it looks kind of like your database, and you never talk to each other. So that's how Wilcock and I got together. We have worked together. We have developed joint information and sources, and we've done, you know, some publications to try to get the word out. In terms of what to do, again, I'm not certain that even the best and the brightest of the in crowd knows what's really going to happen. Because I found so many instances where they're working off these old texts, these old ancient documents, these rituals, and they obviously haven't a clue about the real physics behind them. So they could literally be spending all this money, which they're stealing from us, which is trillions. They could be building their huge underground cities like in the Urals and in Russia. They could be doing their seed bank, which they're doing, remember, up in Norway?
Yes.
They've got this, you know, socked away for the... I mean, it's all there. You can see what they're doing to get ready. But suppose they're being misled. Mm-hmm. Suppose they're not reading the physics correctly because they don't know there's a physics. It's so compartmentalized that the guys that are working with the physics are developing these neat spaceships and all that stuff, or the energy sources. They're not talking to the political folks that we're seeing or making these other decisions because, remember, it's secret, secret, secret. They would rather give up a major American city then release the secret of the physics, because if they do that, they totally lose control. And their purview, their paradigm, their whole reason for existing is all about control. So that they can't do that. They can't go there. They can't say, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we haven't read this right. I mean, no one has called me up on the phone lately from deep inside and said, hey, Hoagland, what do you really think is going to happen? Unless you guys work for them, in which case it's a very elegant technique. The point is that you have to go by the numbers. And the numbers tell me, at this point, two very important things. One is it's not a date. It's not going to happen at the stroke of midnight on December 21, 2012, or 11:11 a.m. That's part of the synchronized ritual. That's a reinforcement that this is really based on the physics, because the code is 11:11. 11:11 is actually, I'll tell you the answer, then you can go and back engineer how we get there. 11:11 is a code for 19.5, which is the key geometry of the upwelling physics of every planet in the solar system. So that tells, it's like the swastika. It's like another version of imprinting something, an imprint, that this is really physics-based, HD physics-based.
Okay.
So there are two tracks using this physics to avert what is to come, if there is something bad coming. One is technology. I strongly suspect that HARP, in fact, is one of the positive technologies protected by all the stupid lies all around it. I mean, the worst case scenario, you know, the mind control and the, they're doing this, they're bombarding people with M-rays, you know, all this stuff. No, it's to protect what HARP's real raison d'etre is, which is to try to work with plasmas in the ionosphere, because plasmas are a key to controlling torsion. Torsion waves, and torsion waves are the 3D etheric manifestation of the HD physics in this dimension. So you got a huge multi-gigawatt transmitter working with plasmas upstairs at the poles. Now we find the Russians are very interested in both poles. They've sent an expedition to the North Pole. Putin did something very curious this past summer. And they also sent a not-so-secret intelligence guy in charge of their intelligence activities to the South Pole. Now, what was that all about? Well, it's because the poles are the secret to controlling the Earth if it wants to flip over. So someone somewhere is actually working on a technology to prevent the worst case scenario. That's good news, because they live here. That means at least one group isn't going to try to leave Dodge. They're actually working to solve the problem. And I can point to, there are some other cute aspects of HAARP that we don't have time to get into, but they're on the web and they're in Dark Mission, and they're just so amazingly cool, affirming that some group actually is looking to solve the problem for all of us.
Okay.
And that's only with the physics and technology we can see. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes that we're not seeing.
Okay.
That's classified. In other words, they could, as I told one neocon some years ago when I was having this discussion with him, and it was really amusing because this is somebody that lives, he's a very high-level banker. Go to the money. Follow the money, which I did. He lives right next to George Bush down in Houston, all right? So he's obviously intimately involved in that set of conversations. And I laid out exactly at that point, which was several years ago, what I thought might happen. Not will, but might. And he looked at me, and it was the second most intriguing thing that had been told me after Gene Roddenberry's statement. He looked at me and he says, "But you realize, Hoagland, that you'll get no credit for this." And I said, "What?" He says, "Well, but this has to be done in secret. Nobody could ever know." I said, "Go do it. To hell with credit. Just go do it." And so things are being done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't have to know if what's happening. We don't know the need to. We don't need to know the details. We just need to know that someone's, you know, Bill O'Reilly, someone's looking out for you. And I think there is a component. Remember, it's a fiefdom. Nobody's all in sync. They're all at war with each other. And there's some component that says, "Holy cow, my wife doesn't have a ticket. Maybe I should do something for the planet because she's going to be stuck here."
Mm-hmm.
So someone who wants to have his wife stick around for a while.
Sure.
So, the other track, which frankly is the more interesting track to me, and it's been slowly coming up, you know, the race analogy on the inside, on the inside rail, you know, horse races, is the consciousness track. Because Art and George and I have been doing these consciousness experiments on coast for years.
Mm-hmm.
We have demonstrated that there really is some undefinable, invisible ability of a mass of people focusing on the same objective to affect 3D reality.
Mm-hmm.
In part, I am sitting here because of that focused technology from Art with the Coast audience, who, when I had the heart attack back in 1999, apart from all of Robin's ministrations and the homeopathics and her, you know, instantaneous, immediate intervention, over the longer term, for that critical first week or so, when Art was focusing people's consciousness on me, there was a difference. I really believe that that intervention in that critical first few days really was critical in getting me over that crisis, and then Robin's long-term, you know, supplements and all the other things that she had me doing, and I was eating 10,000 pills per day, that all of that ultimately wound up with me having not one problem, sitting here in perfect health 10 years after that event. So I got to thinking, for obviously personal reasons, what if we could harness that technology, that invisible mind connection, to work on this same problem? And so we've been discussing quietly with George how we would set up some more controlled experiments, and there was one recently where I forget who it was who wanted to do something and had put up a countdown clock, and George had his audience focus on it, and sure enough, Princeton eggs, these random number generators that have been set up under the Consciousness Project at Princeton University, actually showed an effect. On time, on schedule, when people at a certain time of day, I forget when it was, were focusing on the experiment. Suppose we were to lay out in some large media format, in theater, on television, specials, whatever, this is the problem as we've determined it. These are the windows of vulnerability where intervention would be useful. And then we give people simply the database that this has worked over here, it can also work over there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we, in the process, we democratically empower ordinary folks, in quotes, all over the world to collectively put aside their isms, their differences, their my God is bigger than your God nonsense, and we focus together as a collective human family to solve potentially the greatest problem in the history of the human family in this iteration of the world. And suppose it worked. That's our challenge. And that's why I'm doing what I do. That's why I wrote the book. And that's why I'm hoping you're enjoying what you're hearing on this program.
Okay, well, that's very impressive. So you're taking, you know, in a sense, Ingo Swann was able to affect with his mind this thing under, you know, with the help of SRI and Halbudoff
and all that. Yeah, the so-called magnetometer experiment.
Exactly.
Yeah, he actually fiddled with it and confused the hell out of them.
And
they
and
said,
it was supposed
know,
to be absolutely, no,
impossible.
You couldn't do it.
But see, it's torsion. It's all about torsion waves. The Soviets, the Russians, back when they were the Soviets, have 50 years of a database of this is a real physics, which again has been suppressed in the Western world. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring these two cultures together. I mean, isn't it interesting that we had so much positive response to our Washington, D.C. National Press Club press conference? We had four Russian networks show up. We had a Russian network show up in this living room and sit here with me in the screen showing some of this stuff, which is going to be beamed on NTV, which is the largest commercial Russian television network, to 120 million Russians in the next few days. If we can build bridges between two cultures that have a database that shows this is real science, this is real physics, this cannot be suppressed provided ordinary folks forget the authorities who have been lying to them and they listen to the folks that are trying to get them to see elements of the truth. And then, of course, they have to do their own homework because you can't sit and listen to me and believe me. You can't. You should not. But you have the net. You have Google. Google is your friend. Everybody say after me, Google is my friend. You can now cross-correlate from so many sources that you will get a gestalt that most of what I'm telling you is in fact verifiable and therefore real. And if that's true, you can't sit there on the couch watching television any longer. You've got to go out and do something because 2012 is coming.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard Hoagland. This has been really fabulous. Camelot thanks you, and we hope to return to interview you and Farrell and continue the story.
One of the problems of publishing a book like Dark Mission is credibility. When you make claims, even claims based on evidence, even claims based on a NASA source like Ken Johnston, they are always open to interpretation by many, and they're certainly open to attack in terms of the credibility of your sources. In the last few hours, on Amazon.com, there has been a review of Dark Mission published by a former NASA flight controller, who not only affirmed that most of what we have put in Dark Mission is correct, but he has also told me, through this public venue, that there used to be a time when I was doing Coast or doing Bell, that the flight controllers would be listening to my expositions on various NASA activities, and that the flight controllers themselves had put all this together as a compilation in the Johnson Space Center Library. And then, after a period of time, probably 10 years ago, that tape disappeared. He was disturbed. He went looking for the tape. He then found that he was instructed to stop looking for the tape under penalty not specified. James Oberg, who is NASA's current defender and who has been attacking Ken Johnston viciously, wrote a response on Amazon claiming that this person was making unsubstantiated claims, that he in fact was blowing smoke. And then a few hours later he posted a second review where he affirmed that in fact this flight controller is exactly who he claims to be. Something is changing.